Well, when you think about the weather, Matt, who's the first person you think about?
Al Roker. Come on. I mean, okay. That is quintessential. When you say weather, the first person that pops to mind, Al Roker, Jim Cantore. I mean, okay. Somebody talking about the weather, a meteorologist, a weatherman on TV.
Have you ever thought about Bob Dylan?
Not until we talked to Terry, our producer, and we did our top 10 weather songs episode. And then I realized, wow, Bob Dylan really likes the weather.
Yes, he does. So much so that we have someone on this podcast today who is going to talk to us all about it. This is our much anticipated episode on Bob Dylan in the weather with Dr. Alan Robach. Now, I'm meteorologist Joe Martucci. I'm here with Matt Holliner from our Across the Sky podcast team. And Alan Robach, who was a professor of mine at Rutgers, has done a research paper on Bob Dylan in the weather. This was in 2005. And we chatted with him all about it. We also got into a little bit of his research about nuclear winter. That is really what he's most known for. But Bob Dylan's a close second here. I do want to just say a note before we get into the episode. I need to apologize. I did say in previous episodes that he did his PhD dissertation on Bob Dylan in the weather. That was not true. That was my fault. He did do a piece on Bob Dylan in the weather. It was not his PhD dissertation. So I apologize for that. He did his PhD dissertation on climate modeling back in the 1970s. And we talk a little bit about that too. But it was a fun episode, Matt. It was a fun episode talking about Bob Dylan in the weather. Sean Sublett, our Across the Sky podcast teammate in Richmond, also is with us for the call. So we will get right into it. Dr. Alan Robach, Bob Dylan in the weather. And now we will get started with our episode here. We are joined with Dr. Alan Robach. He is a lifelong Bob Dylan fan. He's an American climatologist and meteorologist working at Rutgers University, where he is a distinguished professor and taught 21-year-old Joe Martucci climate dynamics back in 2012. He's traveled to Antarctica. He's traveled to Cuba for research. He's a fellow of the American Meteorological Society, the American Geophysical Union, and is also a world-renowned expert on nuclear winter. Though we're going to stick to Bob Dylan for the most part for this podcast. We'd like to welcome you onto the show. Dr. Robach, thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for your interest.
Absolutely. I'll actually be honest with you. Our podcast producer, who just got promoted, so congratulations to him, Terry Lipschitz, he actually said when I brought this up in conversation really earlier this year, he's like, you have to have him on one day. And he asked me like one or two times and said, all right, I said, I'm going to email him. So I'm glad we were able to start off and do this here. In 2005, you wrote an article for the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. For everyone listening, that's like our weather research journal article, comes out every month. And it's called Tonight As I Stand Inside the Rain, Bob Dylan in Weather Imagery. And you can check it out if you like. You can go to Dr. Robach's website. You can see the link there. But you wrote that you became a fan of him in 1966 when you were a freshman at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So how did that start? Because we're going on now 60 years of Bob Dylan fanhood.
Yeah. Well, that's where I went to college. And that's where I became a meteorologist, because there was a course in earth science that in ninth grade, I signed up for earth science in high school. And they said, that's for the students who aren't very good. You should take biology. So I did. But when I got to Madison, they had a course in earth science, which I took. And it was taught by Lyle Horn in the meteorology department. About a third of it was meteorology. And that's where I discovered meteorology.
Got it. So when you were growing up, starting to listen to Bob Dylan, I believe by 1966, he already had a few albums out. So is he, I think he was already pretty well known by that point in time, right?
Well, that's where I discovered him. And I listened to his second album, The Freewheeling Bob Dylan. And it just was a great record. And I became a fan. And first time I was able to see him in person was in 1974 when I was in graduate school in Boston.
And I know, and this is going back into the article, in 2005, you said you've been to 36 Bob Dylan concerts. So I'm imagining the count has gone up since then. Where are we at now?
So the last time I saw Bob Dylan was last week.
Okay. There you go. All right. And how was it?
in Newark, and it was my 49th.
49th. Okay. All right. Very good.
So it was, the band was great. His voice is creaky, and it's sort of an experience, but it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Well, Dr. Roback, the first time I heard something that was relatively new from Dylan was when he did the Traveling Wilburys bit there. And I guess it was the late 80s with Tom Petty and the rest of those group. Obviously, he was around a long time before that. So how did you come across this kind of marriage of his weather imagery and fandom? Did one kind of preclude the other, or did it all just kind of happen at the same time?
Ever since I first heard him, I've gotten his records and listened to him, and people say to me, "Why do you like Bob Dylan? He can't sing." And so I tried to think about it, and that's why I wrote this article. I wrote that, I like the words, I like the politics, I like the humor, and he's so clever to use words. But I realize that almost every song has either weather or climate in it, so that's why, so that sort of touches me. And in my article, I talk about a couple of the songs, obviously "Blowing in the Wind," but one of my favorites is called "Chimes of Freedom," which mixes, you hear the lightning, you see the thunder, and it mixes politics with his observations of a thunderstorm. He even understands that when thunderstorms are strongest is at sunset. So far between sundown's finish and midnight's broken toll, I ducked inside a doorway, thunder crashing. So that's how it starts. And so I really, it's an amazing combination of weather and music. And I like the way he sings because you have to pay attention. And it's many, many people have recorded his songs, and in particular, Joan Baez, who has a beautiful voice, and they were an item for a while, and so it all goes together.
And do you have a favorite song of Bob Dylan's with a weather connection? Well, at least there might be another Bob Dylan song that doesn't have a weather connection that might be your favorite. But as far as the ones that do have to deal with weather, is there a favorite for you?
Well, I just mentioned "Chimes of Freedom" from 1964, and so but "Blowing in the Wind," and it's hard to have a favorite Bob Dylan song because there's so many great ones, like over 500. And so at the time I wrote it, I searched for words. Of the 465 songs, "Sun" was found in 63, "Rain," "Wind" in 55, "Rain" in 40 of them, "Sky" in 36 of them. So all of them, many of them have different weather relationships.
From like a 30,000 foot view, like in your opinion, listening to him for so long, going to the concerts, why do you think he likes to talk about weather so much? From the first thing that sticks out to me is that it's relatable to everybody, but maybe you have something a little more in depth than that.
To try and explain why Bob Dylan does anything or what his songs mean is beyond me, because they can mean many different things at the same time to whoever's listening to them. So I can't tell you that. But like you said, weather is experienced by everybody, and this is, I mean, when I give a talk about nuclear winter, I ask, it's kind of depressing to listen to it, and then I say, "How does it feel to people? How does it feel?" That's one of his most famous lines. And we scientists think about data and facts and numbers, but how it feels is how most people relate to the world. And so that I just reminds me that to focus on that too, not just on facts.
I was also told by, this is from Terry, he said that this year or earlier this year was the 60th anniversary of the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. And he said that there were several weather-related songs, "Blowing in the Wind," "Girl from North Country," and "A Hard Rain's a Gonna Fall." Admittedly, I did not know that, but he wanted me to pass that along to you during our podcast episode. Do you feel like, is that like his most weather-heavy album, do you think? Or are there other ones? Or a little more weather heavy.
No, I already knew about those songs, but I quote a bunch of them in my article. Like, so in "Chimes of Freedom," he says, "Through the mad mystic hammering of the wild ripping hail, the sky cracked its poems in naked wonder. Isn't that a great way to describe severe weather? I mean, I don't know anybody else that can use words like that. And then there's a lot of quotes for like "Girl from the North Country," which you mentioned. Well, if you go when the snowflakes storm, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howling winds. And then "You ain't going nowhere." Clouds so swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, railings froze. Get your mind off wintertime. You ain't going nowhere. So, and one of my and some of them are really funny. There's one called California. "San Francisco is fine. You sure get lots of sun, but I'm used to four seasons. California's got just one."
Yeah, there's some great references there. But also, you're talking about the Free Will and Bob Dylan. The album cover is weather related too. It's him and his girlfriend walking down a snowy street in New York. So even some imagery, not even in the songs, but just the album cover itself is very weather related. Are there any other album covers where weather was featured on it, or is that the only one?
I don't know. I haven't done a study of it. There's like many, many albums too. But yeah, it looks like they're really cold too in
Yeah, it looks like
that.
yeah they're ready to get out of the cold. That was it's a great picture, but one where it's like they're happy but also uncomfortable at the same time. But it's just an iconic image to go along with all the great weather related songs on that album.
I mean, even his song "Last Thoughts" on Woody Guthrie, who was one of his heroes, who he came and visited in New Jersey when Woody Guthrie was in a hospital here, when he first came to the East Coast. He said, "Your sky cries water, and your drain pipes a pouring, and the lightning's a flashing, and the thunder's a crashing, and the windows are rattling and breaking, and the rooftops are shaking, and your whole world's a slamming and banging, and your minutes of sun turn to hours of storm." And you say you and to yourself, you sometimes say, "I never knew it was going to be this way. Why didn't they tell me the day I was born?"
That would be a very long-range forecast to be told about all those storms the day you were born. That'd be the best meteorologist ever if he got to that nailed that forecast. But that sounds like a really stormy day. I mean, again, the imagery is just great, the way he describes it.
And the title of my article, "Tonight as I Stand Inside the Rain." What a great way to talk about experiencing rain tonight as I stand inside the rain. What does that even
Well, it definitely sounds wet and a little bit gloomy to me, but I'll leave that up to everybody's interpretation. We're gonna take a brief break here, and on the other side, we're gonna come back. We're gonna speak more to Dr. Alan Robach about Bob Dylan, the weather, and more. You're listening to the Across the Sky podcast. We are back with the Across the Sky podcast. I'm meteorologist Joe Marcucci. Across the Sky podcast has new episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts or on your favorite local news website. We are part of Lee Enterprises, one of over 70 digital daily or newspaper websites across the country. Our team is Across the Sky, and we are speaking with Dr. Alan Robach from Rutgers University about Bob Dylan in the weather. In 2005, he had an article published called "Tonight as I Stand in the Rain," inside the rain, I apologize, "Bob Dylan and Weather Imagery." You did note, though, that before this article that you wrote in 2005, you, quote, "accomplished one of my lifelong goals of publishing a paper with a Dylan quote as a title called 'Blowing in the Wind, Research Priorities for Climate Effects of Volcanic Eruptions.'" So I have to imagine you were thinking about doing this for a while before you got into it. So I'm just curious, like, what did Rutgers think when you said, "Hey, I'm going to do an article on Bob Dylan in the weather"? What was the reaction like?
Well, the great thing about being a professor is you don't have a boss; you can do whatever you want. So I didn't ask
Right.
anybody, but I did it. But the AMS liked it. In fact, they featured my article on their website all that summer. I think the editor of the journal really liked it.
I can see that. Yeah.
By the
Well,
way, one of the most famous Bob Dylan quotes is, "You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows," from Subterranean Homesick Blues. Now, what does that mean? if you've seen the movie Don't Look Back by D.A. Pennebaker, he has Bob Dylan famously holding a bunch of cards, which he keeps flipping down as he goes through this song. And so I took some screenshots that say Wind Blows with Bob Dylan holding that, and I used that as a figure in my article. And I got permission from the person, the movie, from Pennebaker to use those. And of course, you do need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. I had a consulting job where they were wondering why this thing blew down in a construction site near National Airport, and they got the data, and he said, you know, it said north winds, but it blew down, the wind was actually from the south. What does that mean? Or it said the wind was from the north, but it blew down the wrong direction. I said, well, the way the wind blows is the direction from which the wind is blowing, not the direction toward which the wind is blowing. So you really do need a meteorologist to explain that to people.
That's true. It's one going of those. Certainly,
going back to blowing in the wind, for my PhD dissertation, I was studying climate change, and I looked at both the things that cause climate change externally, like increasing carbon dioxide and volcanic eruptions, but I also looked at chaos, natural variability. And so I have a quote in my PhD dissertation, it says, "The answer, my friend, is blown in the wind." And I put that in there. And by that, I meant to refer to natural variability of the wind. So blown in the wind can mean lots of different things.
Yes, it can, both literally and metaphorically as well. I'm sorry, Matt, you had a question there?
No, I was just going to say you absolutely need a weatherman for the forecast. Maybe you can have a weather station tell you the direction, although even then, sometimes people get confused, but certainly for the forecast. So if he wants to be like, if you're trying to be literal, I guess you could just look at your weather app and see what the current conditions are, weather conditions, but you're going to trust the meteorologist for the forecast, or which way is the wind going to blow. So I think he was a little bit off in that, unless you want to get very literal and very specific.
Yeah, well, I was the director of the undergraduate meteorology program here for 9 years, and every year we had to recruit new students, and I tell them, if you become a meteorologist, you can become a very special person. You can predict the future. You can tell the future. And if you become a climatologist, you can change the future, because you can tell the world, if you behave this way, if you emit this amount of carbon dioxide, this is the future you'll get. And if you emit less than that, you'll get a different future. And so you can help change the future.
It's true. I've never heard it put that way, changing the future. But yeah, I mean, you really can. I mean, with the advice that you're giving people, I mean, what we're doing now is going to shape how the climate we're going to experience 20, 30 years from now, what we're doing now. So that is a very good point.
Right.
You know, staying on the chaos topic, you said that there. You studied under the legendary Edward Lorenz, most known for his work with the butterfly effect. And, you know, you could kind of think of it this way, you know, one flap of a seagull's wings could alter the course of weather forever, talking about how little tiny changes can have bigger impacts down the road. You studied with him when you were getting your PhD. You know, what was it like being with such a revolutionary person in meteorology? Probably if you were to build a Mount Rushmore of meteorologists and researchers, he would be at the top. What was that like, you know, growing up and learning under him?
My master's degree was done with Norman Phillips, who's also famous for numerical weather prediction. But then he retired and went to work for the government. So I needed a new advisor. And I went to talk to all the professors, and I went into Lorenz's office and said, I'm interested in air pollution and I like computers. And he said, well, climate would be a good thing to get into these days. And that was in 1974. And so I was really lucky that I took his advice, because back then we didn't have general circulation models. I used an energy balance model. And so I took an energy balance model built by Sellers and used that. And I made it time dependent. And he said, well, you might want to put in randomness in. And he told me how to write a program to get a random number in my program. But he was a very nice guy, very sweet guy, very shy. And unlike many other professors at MIT and Harvard who were pretty full of themselves, he wasn't at all. And so I felt like every month or so I should go into his office, tell him what I was doing and ask him questions. But he didn't. He let me do whatever I wanted to do. So, but it was great. I never published a paper with him, but he gave me a really good direction to get my work done.
Yeah, you said computers, right? So you're talking 1970s. Did you think we would be here at this point in time with computers, and especially with AI being, you know, hot topic in the past year? Is that that's something you saw back then, you know, coming to this point 50 years later?
No, I mean, back then you had a key punch machine and you would punch holes in cards and to make your deck of commands, Fortran commands, and you would feed them into a card reader, and then you'd wait and wait and wait, and sometime in the future printout would come from your from the printer, and if it was a very short printout, you'd know something went wrong, and if it was long, you know that your program actually ran and you had to go back and change some cards and be careful not to drop them because they get out of order. And so, but it was really powerful. And I remember when the first hand calculator came out when I was in graduate school, that was really great. And now I walk around with a supercomputer, an iPhone in my pocket that has so much more power than the Cray supercomputer that we used for our first calculations back when I was first starting.
I think I saw that the iPhone was is more technologically advanced than the rocket you used to go to the moon. I think that's always a thing. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just crazy how far we've come. But what I wanted to follow up on is, after you published the article in the Bulletin of American Meteorological Society, what kind of feedback did you get? Because it definitely is a different type of article than what's typical in there. Not a lot of mentions of music in the Bulletin of American Meteorological Society, especially tying it in with the weather. So what kind of feedback did you get after that article was published?
A couple people had already written articles about music and weather, but and got in touch with me. I reference a paper by George Sisko, Mark Twain on weather in my article, and some people who are really I sent it to some friends of mine who were Dylan buddies just to impress them that I could get an article published on Dylan, and I told people it's my most proud accomplishment, this article, but I just did it because I had to do it. I had it in me. I wanted to express how I felt, and I think it sort of stands up to time. If anybody's interested, it was published in April 2005. Or it's on my homepage. It's only a few pages. I recommend reading it. There was a guy named Guido Visconti who. So I was really lucky. I got to go to Antarctica to launch weather balloons, and he talked to people that I met there, and so he wrote an article about Bob Dylan, and so his colleague Francesco Cairo heard me play Tombstone Blues when we were both working at McMurdo, and told him that he used a line in the Italian edition of his book, Fundamentals of Physics and Chemistry, The Atmosphere. And so then he found out about this. So he wrote a page about it. And I that was published along with mine. I had to sort of fix up the English in it, but he's another guy who's a climate scientist who's really into Bob Dylan. So there are a few people like that.
Have you two went to a Bob Dylan concert together?
No, I never went with him, but I went with other people. Pasha Groysman, I went with to several, and Mike Fennessy I met with the University of Maryland. So a few people I know who are big Dylan fans. I've been with my wife's been to 25 with me now. That's true love, because she doesn't really love Bob Dylan, but she still goes with me.
Did she go with you last week?
Yes, she did.
She did. That was very nice of her.
A friend of mine from college, Gene Sherman, who I mentioned in this article, was coming to the East Coast because his kids are living here, and he was arriving the night before. And I said, Gene, if you want to go to Bob Dylan, I've got a ticket. And my wife said, oh, I hope he goes so I don't have to go. But he was too tired. He didn't go, so she came with me.
Right. What kind of music does she like? Does she have is there a Bob Dylan equivalent for her?
No, she likes all kinds of music, and she likes Bob Dylan. She thinks he's a great writer, and she listens to Bob Dylan, but she listens to lots of other things too. So
got it. Okay, varied taste. Go ahead, Matt.
I was gonna say, this does have me thinking, you know, since, you know, Bob Dylan references the weather so much, I wonder if anybody else is going to be inspired to do some research. Is there any other artist or band out there that references weather more? So I feel like now we can have a competition, like, who is the ultimate weather enthusiast musician. Like, is it Bob Dylan or is someone referenced weather more? I almost feel like, I wonder if anybody has looked into that. Like, which artist references weather the most in their songs? Bob Dylan's got to be up there, but does anybody do it more than him? I'm curious now.
Well, first of all, you've got to be very prolific and have written lots of songs to get up there. But there was an article about the Beatles and their references to weather, because they wrote lots of songs too. But I don't know. That would be something for somebody who's interested in this to do some research. Now with the internet, of course, you can search through lyrics very easily on databases and do that.
Very true. Yeah, I'll end with this, and we'll get off of Bob Dylan for just a minute. It's hard not to talk about Alan Robach and not talk about your research in Nuclear Winter. I know we can do a whole another podcast on this, but could we give maybe a tease for our audience about the work that you've done over the past couple of decades on it?
It's been four decades. So
40 so, years, almost as long as you like Bob Dylan.
No, not quite. I went to an AGU meeting in 1982 in San Francisco, American Geophysical Union. There was an article, there was a talk about climatic effects of nuclear war. So I went to it, and it was canceled because the authors, Turco, Toon, Ackerman, worked for NASA, and their center director said, you can't put nuclear war in an article. If people in Washington hear about that, they'll cut our funding. So they tried to figure out what should we call it, and they called it Nuclear Winter, Forcing in Response, and published a famous paper the next year, Turco, Toon, Ackerman, Pollock, and Sagan. And I published a paper the next year in Nature. The basic story is, if there's a nuclear war, fires would be started in cities that would be targeted, and a lot of smoke would go up into the stratosphere, and that would block out the sun, making it cold, dark at the surface. And if there's enough smoke, it would get below freezing, even in the summertime in the middle of continents, and this would be a huge impact on agriculture. And so we wrote papers about it, and it turns out U.S. and Russia, and Soviet Union at the time, had enough nuclear weapons to produce a nuclear winter. And a Russian team, Alexandrov and Stenchikov, also worked on this, and together, we told Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev about nuclear winter, and they accepted the science because it came from scientists on both sides, and that was a motivation for them to end the nuclear arms race, and the number has been going down ever since. Unfortunately, there's still about 10,000 nuclear weapons deployed, and that's still enough to produce nuclear winter, and so I continue to work to try and get people aware of it. 5 years ago, a treaty to ban nuclear weapons was put through the United Nations by the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And they got the Nobel Peace Prize that year for making the world aware of the humanitarian impacts of nuclear war, both the horrific direct effects and the indirect effects, and for getting this treaty done. And this week, right now at the United Nations in New York, there's a meeting of the countries that have signed the treaty. More than half the countries in the world have signed this. There were more than 100 countries that came to the three meetings they held that I went to two of them to tell them about nuclear winter. And so the rest of the world wants the nine countries with nuclear weapons to get rid of them, because they know that they will suffer if there's a war, even if bombs aren't dropped on them. We published a paper last year in Nature Food, which you can also get from my website, that calculated if India and Pakistan had a nuclear war, 1 to 2 billion people could die from starvation because of the impacts on agriculture. And if the U.S. and Russia had a nuclear war, most people in the world could die from starvation the next year after they ran out of food because they couldn't grow enough food. And so we're trying to publicize that and to get the rest of the world's trying to pressure the nine countries with nuclear weapons to reduce their arsenals. The problem is the same as the problem with global warming. A lot of people can make a lot of money by keeping doing business as usual. So fossil fuel companies want to keep selling coal and oil and natural gas, and the military-industrial complex wants to keep producing nuclear weapons, and people's military careers depend on it, and people's big companies' profits. For example, Lockheed is a big nuclear weapons contractor, and it really bothers me that the American Meteorological Society takes money from them and puts the Lockheed logo at the bottom of every AMS webpage. So I wrote an article in BAMS about that, which was published last year, pointing that up, but AMS still wants to take their money, so... Anyway, that's what I'm passionate about, to try and save the world from the potential accidental use or use on purpose of nuclear weapons.
That was a good brief introduction on it. And like I said, we can definitely do more on that, but I did want to bring that up with you. Like I said, hard to not talk about you without talking about that topic. But I think we had a lot of fun talking about Bob Dylan as well. On a lighter note, we do appreciate the time. Before we go, how could people follow you and see what you're doing?
Well, my name is spelled R-O-B-O-C-K. If you type that into Google, you'll get my homepage because it's an unusual spelling. And you can go to my homepage and find out all my articles. I also work on climate intervention or geoengineering, which is another way humans might put particles up in the stratosphere and to try and look at the potential benefits and risks of that. So if you want any information, all of my papers are there. If you want to ask me questions about it, just send me an email.
Awesome. Great. Well, Dr. Robach, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for your interest.
Well, we thank Dr. Alan Robach for coming on the podcast. Like we said, this was a couple of months in the making, and we're glad we got him to talk all about it. You brought up a good question, Matt. Is there maybe a Bob Dylan Jr. out there who talks about the weather almost as much as Bob? I couldn't think of anything myself off the top of my head, but then again, I also haven't researched it.
You know, there are plenty of artists that have done songs. I mean, again, when we did our top 10 weather songs episode about a year ago, and again, it's worth a listen if you want, if you're curious what are the top 10 weather songs are. We really spent some time on it, and we realized there are a lot of songs that reference the weather, at least in part. And then what we really focus on is how many songs are really about the weather, though, like really weather focused. So we narrowed it down and did come up with a top 10 list. And that's where this whole discussion, like how many weather songs are out there and what artists do really focus and talk about weather more. And there definitely are more. And Bob Dylan is one of them. Terry, again, was one that referenced it. Like, there's so many Bob Dylan songs that mention the weather. Most artists, though, it's only like one or two songs, you know, they did not a lot of weather references. So as far as an artist that is weather focused, I think Alan may be right. It's Bob Dylan, the Beatles, they reference weather a lot. And then other than that, I can't think of anyone that might rival them. Although if there's somebody listening to this podcast who knows of a band or an artist that mentions weather a lot, let us know. Who could rival Bob Dylan and the Beatles? Is there somebody we're forgetting? Let us know.
You know what? I'm going to say there's one, and I'm going to shout out my guy Schwazy on this one, who we just exchanged a couple of DMs today, because on my YouTube recap, he was my number one artist for like the fifth year in a row. He talks about weather a decent amount, talking about being from Malibu, California, SoCal, the sun, the beach, the waves. I keep thinking I'm going to interview him, and I actually did bring it up to him once, and he was down for it. And maybe we got to bring him on. Maybe we got to bring him on one day.
Well, I feel like he would be the opposite of Bob Dylan, because it seems like most of Bob Dylan is talking about bad weather and cold weather, like the girl from the North Country and the album cover of him walking in the snow with his girlfriend. I mean, it's mostly bad weather, and particularly cold weather. So I feel like Swayze is the opposite, talking about the nice weather and the sunny weather, the good weather. So it's like kind of like an opposite of Bob Dylan. Lots of weather references, but the good kind of weather rather than the bad weather.
He is the king of the summer, Matt. So we'll see. Maybe we'll get Swayze on one of these days. Shout out to Swayze. All right, let's talk about what we have coming up here. We're rounding out the year. We got some year-end things, things introducing winter, year-end list. We have the 10 things to know about winter. That will be your December 18th episode. Then it's either going to be on Christmas Day or just after Christmas Day. We're going to do our year in review episode, recapping the year that was, and we'll have more episodes along the way as well here. If you want to give us a call, you certainly can. Leave us a voicemail. We have gotten a few, and we do appreciate that. You can give us a call. The area code is 609-272-7099. Again, 609-272-7099. Or you can give us an email at podcast@lee.net. Matt, did I miss anything?
No, like I said, again, if anybody knows of artists who are more prolific than Bob Dylan or the Beatles and mentioning weather, let us know. That's what I'm curious about. We'll ask, instead of just asking the internet, we'll ask the podcast audience to let us know who is the bigger weather fan out there than Bob Dylan.
All right. Let us know. We're looking for a couple of voicemails, hopefully by next week. But for Matt Holliner, who's with me here from Chicagoland, Sean Sublin in Richmond, Virginia, and Kirsten Lang in Tulsa,
I'm meteorologist Joe Martucci. We are your Across the Sky podcast weather team. We'll see you next Monday, wherever you get your podcasts or on your favorite local news website.